Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Neil Zacharias, and you're listening to Eat for the Planet. On this show, we try to answer the question, how can we eat in a way that nourishes us without starving the planet? The show features conversations with food industry leaders, health and sustainability experts, as well as entrepreneurs and creative minds who are redefining the future of food. Helena Devies from Deliveroo, thank you so much for joining us on the Eat for the Planet podcast.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to talk to you.
Helena, how did you end up at this interesting, exciting role at Deliveroo? Tell us a little bit about your background.
You know, sometimes I look back and I wonder, how did I end up here? So I'm going to try to keep it short because it's a long story, but I'm from Valencia in Spain, and when I finished uni, I decided to go traveling around Australia, which is a fairly vegan-friendly country. This was in 2014, and I moved to Melbourne in 2015 into a shared house with two vegans. And 2015 was actually when I first heard about veganism, plant-based eating. I actually had never heard about it before I went to Australia. So I watched Cowspiracy, Forks Over Knives, and I must admit, I didn't change my habits straight away because I was a very typical Spanish eater who loved jamón and meat and cheese and all of those things. But something did click inside me, and I started doing a lot more research and reading. I did a plant-based nutrition course because I was just really interested, particularly in the health benefits of it, but also climate, and obviously I didn't want to hurt animals either. So anyway, whilst all of this was happening in my personal life, I was working in the international education industry, so nothing to do with food. But eventually in 2017, my partner and I, his name is Rowan. Rowan's from Melbourne. So we moved to Spain together in 2017. And then he got offered a job in London. And so we moved to London, and I decided to quit my job for the Australian company I was working for and go traveling for 3 months. But as things happen, things always happen this way. 2 weeks before I was meant to go traveling, I found this position at Deliveroo to be a senior account manager and manage relationships with some of the, you know, coolest restaurant brands in London. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go traveling. So I'm just going to try. If I get it, great. If not, who cares? So sure enough, I got it. I still got to go traveling for 5 weeks instead of 3 months. And yeah, I started as a senior account manager, got to work with really incredible brands. And little by little, we realized that there was an opportunity in the plant-based space that we hadn't necessarily explored before. And I don't think other companies had explored previously either in the food delivery space. So, yeah, I essentially mixed my personal interest with a huge market opportunity and my role as a head of vegan category, which is what I do now, was born, which was amazing.
That is such an interesting story. I mean, before we get into how that happened, I think for the, I mean, I'm sure most of our, all of our European listeners are pretty familiar with Deliveroo and what it does, but perhaps some of our American listeners might have not heard of it or are not clear on what the business model is. Can you just tell us more about Deliveroo?
Yeah, sorry, I should have probably started with that. So we are a food delivery company. Our headquarters are in London, but we're present in 8 other countries globally. And so what we do is we deliver food from the best local restaurants and grocery shops to consumers via our rider network. So if you're at home and you're hungry and you can't be bothered cooking, you can just order some delicious food from restaurants or order your groceries and then cook at home. There are loads of delivery companies in the US, so hopefully people are familiar with this industry. But I think what makes Deliveroo really special is that everyone working here is so passionate about food. We are a tech company. And our tech is amazing. And I mean, that's something we get a lot of recognition for from the brands we work with. But if you ask any brand in the UK or any of the markets where we operate, generally what they say that makes us unique is our people, because genuinely, like, pretty much everyone here is a foodie. And it's so, everyone's so passionate about the actual food, which is what people on the other end of the platform, you know, want and, mm-hmm. and are using us for. And I think that makes a huge difference. Obviously, we're a business and we care about all of the other business mm-hmm. metrics, but it's the people and it's how much we care about giving our customers what we want to receive as well as customers. So yeah, that's us.
Yeah, so that's, you're similar to, I would say, Uber Eats or Grubhub or DoorDash in the US. There are some similarities, at least overlap on the restaurant side of things.
Yeah, similar but better.
and you're not yet in the US, obviously.
We're not. I think the US is just such a competitive and like huge market that for now we're just focusing on really dominating in the markets where we operate, and then mm-hmm. we'll see where life takes us. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll go back to what you mentioned earlier about how you got this role at Deliveroo and then eventually identified this opportunity that maybe the platform was not tapping into the potential in the vegan category. Where did that come from? Did that, obviously you were passionate about it personally, but was that also something that the data started to reveal from purchase behaviors?
Absolutely. Any business decision we make has to be backed by data. So it was a combination of the two. It was me learning more about this space and then doing a lot more digging into our data and realizing that actually there was something here. And so originally it was almost like a side hustle. On top of what I was doing as an account manager, I made it my mission to improve the user experience mainly. So things like tagging, for example. This was back in 2018 when a lot of restaurants and brands were not necessarily familiar with the differences between vegan and plant-based and vegetarian. And so as a customer, essentially, I was sometimes struggling to find the food I wanted to eat. So I thought, surely I'm not the only one, right? And the UK is well known for being a plant-forward country. So I started working with our product team to optimize how we use our labels and our tags and make it easier for consumers to find these options and then really build that confidence and just almost like through our product, sharing a very clear message that we care about this and we understand it and we're, you know, working really hard to make it as easy as possible for you to find these options. So yeah, originally it was like my side hustle backed by data. And then the market continued to develop. This was 2018. Then throughout 2019 is when it wasn't necessarily as official. It was just me working with different teams internally, trying to improve certain things. But then everything boomed in 2020. I think that was the year when plant-based exploded. And so it was, you know, triple digit growth every month and new product development as well. It was just unbelievable. I feel super privileged to have lived and seen that from the inside, because it was really exciting. It was a completely new category, and all brands, regardless of their size, their positioning, everyone wanted to know more, and a lot of them invested in it and developed really incredible products. So it was amazing.
So at a high level, what have you seen? Can you give us like a overview of the demand for the category since 2018? And also maybe if you can talk about the UK, but also about some of the other regions that you operate in, and how different is the picture, say, in other parts of Europe versus UK?
UK is by far and away the number one country when it comes to plant-based eating. I actually look after the UK and Ireland region, so I don't have, to be honest, the latest data on what's happening across other markets. But from what I know from the wider plant-based industry, I know that places like, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong, and increasingly Italy and France as well, they're really catching up. So before the UK, so as I said, 2020 was the year where we saw the highest growth, but also because obviously the starting point, the previous year, 2019, hadn't been as big, so growth numbers were very PR-able. and then, yeah, I think like throughout 2020, incredible growth as well. Penetration increased a lot, and we saw, so I think roughly about 13% of our orders contain vegan items, which is pretty good, in my opinion. Right. But yeah, I think like, so 2020 highest growth, 2021, obviously with COVID, everything was a little bit messy, but continued to, what's happened since 2020 is that growth has slowed down a little bit, but penetration continues to grow. And demand overall, it's really interesting because unfortunately off the back of COVID and with the current, you know, challenging macroeconomic circumstances, a lot of brands have had to either close down certain sites or even, you know, terminate for good. So what we've seen is that demand for vegan overall remains strong, but whereas a couple of years ago, a lot of the trade was being delivered by fully vegan brands, this is now being split across thousands of brands that now are not fully vegan but offer vegan options. And this ranges from, you know, your local pizza, Neapolitan pizza place, to your QSRs, to your grocery store. So there's a lot more supply and demand remains strong, but at the moment, supply is outpacing demand.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of led into what my next question was going to be, which is where was the increase in supply coming from? Was it new vegan restaurants launching, or was it an addition of vegan items onto existing menus? In a way, I think the latter is more exciting. I mean, not to say vegan restaurants are not exciting. As a vegan myself, I find it easy to navigate a vegan restaurant, but that's just convenience. But what's more exciting from an impact standpoint is obviously the fact that you have existing restaurants recognizing the demand for vegan food. Plus, I think it's probably well-timed with the sort of increase in product innovation that's been happening in the last few years. So all of this has sort of happened around the same time, right? So where maybe a few years ago, even if there was a demand for of all vegan cheese on a pizza place, the cheese options available maybe 5 years ago aren't so exciting as compared to what's available now. So I guess my question is really, initially, were you seeing mostly vegan restaurants increase, or was it just more options generally across Deliveroo?
So initially, it was over the past couple of years, it was more fully vegan places, which I absolutely love and I try to support as much as possible as well. But now it's coming from, as I say, like what we call vegan friendly places, right? Places that are not vegan, but that either have a couple of options or are, you know, making a really big effort to be as inclusive as possible and are even committing to 50% plant-based menus. And I fully agree with what you've just said. For me, that's what's really testament to, you know, the growth of the category and what consumers are demanding. And across generations, which is super exciting as well. It's not just millennials or Gen Z. There's older people as well that, whether it's for health reasons or for, you know, to do their bit for the climate, they're choosing to eat more plants. And again, it's not about being vegan or eating 90% plants. It's not about the percentages. It's about doing, you know, as much as you can and being aware of the impact you can have as a consumer, because sometimes we forget that, of course, big companies are the ones that really need to step up and change the game. But as consumers, we have the ability to reduce our impact, our environmental impact, 3 times a day, if not 4 or 5. So it's about doing your bit. And so that's where vegan-friendly restaurants come in, because they play a huge role in exposing people that have potentially never seen a plant-based dish to plant-based options that are not only as delicious and as exciting, but also, in a lot of cases, cost the same. So if you can pay the same price for something that you know is better for the climate and potentially even better for you from a health perspective, why not?
Yeah. Do you have any, I mean, this might be tough for the data to show you, but perhaps you do have an understanding of your consumer base. What's driving these purchase decisions? And maybe it's different based on the demographic. Maybe for Gen Z or millennials, it is more climate. Maybe for older generations, it's health. Is there any way for you to know that? Or do you have some insights?
We've done a few surveys recently, and the majority of the people will say all of the above. But I think this particular survey I'm referring to was among people that either consider themselves flexitarian or are really into plant-based eating. So I think once you've taken that first step and you've explored this market enough, I think what you tend to find out is that people potentially enter through health or animals or climate, but then when they know enough about all the others, then they care a lot. So, but I think generally speaking, for people that are not flexi or vegan, that don't identify with any of these labels, mm-hmm. It tends to be health and climate.
I probably should have asked this question right in the beginning, but from Deliveroo's standpoint, obviously, from a business perspective, they noticed a trending category. They see that consumers, especially younger consumers, are shifting in that direction. They probably also are the ones who likely use the app more than anyone else. So I can see all the right data points leading to we need to do more in this category. But is there also, say, a focus on, you know, you're a food delivery platform, food plays a significant impact on climate change and the planet. Is it also part of Deliveroo's sustainability commitments to focus on this category?
So when the idea was born, not necessarily. It was more from purely wanting to, we say that we're customer obsessed, and it's true. Mm. Everything we do obviously has to be backed with data, as I said, but also we want to make sure that it's meeting or serving a customer need. And we know that a growing base of our customers care about healthy eating, which in many cases can be linked to plant-based eating, not always, but in many cases. They also want to reduce their environmental impact, so plant-based comes in. And, you know, we tend to forget that on top of those reasons, there's just a lot of people that love exploring new food. And that's why we also, that's when we tend to tap into plant-based as well, because it's super exciting. It can be really exciting. So that was originally why the decision was made. Right now, we're a lot more aware of, you know, the environmental impact of certain foods. We're currently actually undergoing our level 3 assessment. And to be honest, we've, again, always using our data, we've asked our consumers what is it that they would like to see us focusing on from a sustainability perspective. And it's mostly food waste and food poverty, because we have a huge rider network and a huge restaurant network. And so we can really leverage that to help people in need, which I think is an amazing thing to be able to do. But also, we know that we have a big role to play in at least helping brands really access this information and understand the potential of this market. And yes, absolutely, today, you know, focusing on the vegan category in the way we're doing it is part of our, you know, our plans and our commitment to sustainability.
Yeah, in a way, it's so, Deliveroo is in such an interesting space, right? Because you sit in the middle between the supply and demand, but you can almost play a very pivotal role there to open up opportunities to connect the supply with the demand. So, which we know is usually the bottlenecks. I mean, all the data points to more consumers want to eat more plant-based food. And in response to that, there has been a rise in options over the years. But sometimes the issue is the food isn't getting to the right people. There's no easy way to, or there's not enough bandwidth between those two endpoints. And I think that's where, you know, I'm assuming majority of your focus goes, is how do you unlock those capabilities through tagging, through easy search capabilities, through featuring certain dishes and restaurants. And increasingly that's, as we've all seen, that it's so much of people's perceptions about vegan food can be changed, right? And it's partly by showcasing that it's just new and exciting food that you can try that perhaps you're going to do for health reasons first, and then you realize it just tastes great and you want to keep eating it. So I find you sit in a very interesting place in the middle where you're able to see both sides of it and then leverage that position to close the gap between demand and supply, which I think is super powerful.
Yeah, and completely agree. And another benefit from where I sit is we see data almost instantaneously. I know what happened yesterday and the day before and the day before and the whole of this year, whereas other companies have to purchase, you know, sales data from trends companies. So I think having the ability to see what's happening in the market in real time is incredible. And we use this on a daily basis to then advise our partners and say, look, suddenly, you know, acai bowls. Everyone wants acai bowls. So, you know, you should potentially consider this. And that's a silly example, but you can imagine how we use our data to then, you know, help brands make the right decisions to ensure that what they're investing their money in, which is marketing and food development, really aligns with what consumers want.
Especially since the restaurant business is just so hard. And, you know, if you're sitting and just thinking of food in a vacuum without any understanding of, I mean, also it depends on the kind of restaurant, right? So if you're a high-end restaurant, does say French food, you might not care about trends at all, because you're not going to do an acai bowl because the data says that. But of course, that's not the vast majority of restaurants out there. And so for most of them, that data can be so, so interesting and powerful. So I know one of the things I do want to talk about is I read that in 2017, Deliveroo was probably one of the first companies to get into the dark or ghost kitchen concept, also known as cloud kitchens. And Deliveroo themselves launched a few ghost kitchen concepts. What's the state of that business, and to what extent has vegan concepts entered into what I believe is called Deliveroo Editions? Tell me more about that business and if vegan food has also become a big part of it.
Yeah, so as you said, we have our Deliveroo Editions, which are delivery-only kitchens or dark kitchens, like a lot of people call them. We have 16 in London and 8, I think it is, in other cities like Brighton, Bristol, Manchester, etc. So generally speaking, in areas where we know there's high demand for Deliveroo. The business has gone from strength to strength in the last few years. And the magic of it is it allows, again, we're connecting, right, consumers and restaurants. It allows restaurants to explore new markets, without the, you know, the investment that generally comes with opening up a new physical site in a new location. So they get to do that at no risk, essentially, and low cost. And on the flip side, consumers that don't have access to some of the, you know, most loved brands in other areas now suddenly get to order them at home. So I think it's a brilliant concept. It's worked incredibly well for us. And again, key differentiator, as you said, because we were one of the first movers. From a vegan food perspective, it's not something we've necessarily focused on through editions, but I guess it's just similar to platform-wide trends. Like, a lot of the brands that we work with on editions are very popular, well-known brands, and the majority of these brands already have one or a bunch of options because, again, they know that there's demand. And you know, you've got your families ordering together, you've got couples and individuals that, you know, again, might not be vegan, but the odd they will want to order it. So it's actually hard to find a relatively well-known brand today that doesn't offer at least one vegan dish, which when I say it out loud, it's pretty amazing because it was not the case a couple of years ago. So we're in a really strong position. Obviously, there's a lot of work still to be done. And now we have to go from offering one option to actually developing a really well-balanced and inclusive, you know, vegan category on a menu or vegan menu. So I'd say actually a really good example is a brand called The Athenian, which is a Greek brand. Mm-hmm. And they have their regular menu and their plant-based menu. And they've done incredibly well through editions. So that's a really good example of a fully plant-based menu.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see that now in so many places. At least I see that here as well in the U.S. that I recall like 10 years ago, it was very hard, especially when I traveled to Europe and parts of Europe where it was almost tough to find anything to eat. Obviously, mm-hmm. that has changed. And what's more interesting is that it's not just about folks like us who are looking to eat all vegan, but it's also majority of the people now who obviously are choosing the vegan items on menus tend to not identify as anything like vegetarian off vegan exactly. or anything. So I think that's exciting because it shows obviously that is the reason the category is growing. I know we've been using the word vegan today, which is interesting because there's been, you know, different reports on how one should brand or categorize your products. And I think in the US, most of the research has pointed to perhaps at least in the retail space that products should be identified as plant-based versus vegan because vegan perhaps turns people away. And I know there's conflicting opinions on that. It's slightly different in the restaurant space. And I think people search vegan, but maybe identify and are drawn to plant-based. I'm not quite clear yet on where consumers fall. We've tried both in my own business. And we find vegan actually works better than plant-based. And I think plant-based is something vegans use more than anyone else. So I don't know what it is that you've seen in the UK. Obviously, in your case, it's clear that you're using the vegan word and it hasn't turned people away. Is that mostly driven by search behavior, or what other data has told you that?
I'm glad you asked this question, because it's arguably the first question everyone asks me when we talk about the, you know, vegan category on Deliveroo, and hopefully this helps more people. But from what we see on our platform, vegan has more than 10 times more searches every month than plant-based. And I think it's, I would completely agree with what you said earlier. It's almost being used as a keyword to find vegan food or plant-based food. So when people go online and you can look at Google search trends, I think Instacart in the US shared their report as well. And they were, I was actually on a panel with someone from Instacart about a year and a half ago, and we were completely aligned on this. When it comes to online searches, vegan is the word consumers are using. Now, that's not to say that then once they found the vegan product, if it's labeled as plant-based, that's where I think we need a little bit more information on what converts more. But I'm yet to see negative data around vegan labels. So for now, until I see something else, something different, I'm going to continue recommending everyone to label products vegan online. Then in physical sites, grocery stores, restaurants, that's a completely different story. There are reports suggesting that plant-based resonates better with a wider, with a wider amount of people. Fine, if that works. I think it's ultimately, it's a branding decision. Mm-hmm. And this is where a lot of brands get it wrong. Who is your consumer? What's your target audience? Who are you speaking to? Because if you're a vegan brand and want to sell to vegans, I mean, it's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
But if you're not sure and you've got physical sites and online stores, then potentially you want to trial both and see how it works. But ultimately, it boils down to understand who you're speaking to and then tailoring your menus and communications to them.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I mean, in my business, we have physical menus in stores that don't sell vegan items, but our menus are all vegan. We identify it as plant-based because majority of the customers are like 90% plus are not vegan or vegetarian. But we've noticed that when they order from the menu, they'll say, give me the vegan burger, even though it doesn't say vegan on the menu. So I think maybe plant-based is less threatening when you see it as a term. And maybe it, you know, the conventional thinking is that in the past, when someone saw vegan, it would lead them to assume it's only for vegans, because vegan is also a term of identity versus plant-based. No one says, maybe people say I'm plant-based, but I don't know anyone who says that.
I think there's also...
So it's interesting.
With plant-based, there's a little bit of confusion still. Mm. And I think this happens with, you know, when we talk among like industry peers, we all live in this bubble in the plant-based world, and we're so certain of, we know everything so well and we're so familiar with everything, but the average person doesn't. So when you see vegan, I think it's more likely than that people understand what that means than plant-based, because we're now seeing plant-based used in many different ways, right? So again, it's a branding decision, but ultimately, the term that conveys 100% clarity and also is most searched is vegan. So yeah. I don't think you can go wrong there.
Yeah, especially if the data is pointing to that, especially for online, that's where you have to head. Which is interesting, because on our online menus for delivery apps, we say vegan, because we know that's what people are looking for. So. You know, and those trends might change. You just have to keep an eye on it. In the last few years, I felt like plant-based food or the vegan category, both in retail and food service, has like witnessed rapid growth. It was it felt like a few years ago, say going back to 2016, 2017, it was an emerging category. And then it just exploded with the rise of Beyond Meat, as well as restaurants and this whole demand for this food. And then the pandemic felt like further pushed that growth up astronomically. However, in the last year or so, reports seem to suggest, and again, I'm saying this in that tone because there's some differences of opinion on this matter, that the category is cooling off, and it partly because maybe some companies are facing some struggles and perhaps too many products in the same category versus diversification. There are a multitude of reasons why that might seem like maybe plant-based is not trending upward like this hockey stick type of growth that it had in the past. Just, you know, broad question, what's your general take on what's happening? Is that maybe more in the US, and is the UK seeing different trends? What is your take on the state of the plant-based industry in general?
The UK, generally speaking, follows very similar trends to the US. I think it's no secret to anyone that some companies are struggling. As I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, a lot of vegan sites, restaurant sites and brands had to close permanently off the back of COVID and are currently still struggling due to, you know, utility bills more than tripling. It's a very challenging environment at the moment. But I don't necessarily think that's due to demand dropping or interest in plant-based eating fading away. I think it's a result of, again, macroeconomic circumstances that are impacting business across all industries. And I think, you know, the media do a really great job at giving, they did a great job at giving the plant-based space praise when it was growing, but they're also doing a really great job at diminishing it now. So my perspective, based on what I see inside Deliveroo, what I hear from, you know, industry leaders in the UK, is that we're going through a rough patch, but this space is only going to continue growing because the younger generations are demanding more plant-based foods. Because from a climate change perspective, there's probably going to come a time when we're really going to have to get serious about certain things, you know? And again, more and more awareness around the health benefits of plant-based. So yes, it's a difficult time. Some companies, sadly, will not make it through the next year or next couple of years. But the ones that do, I think, will absolutely thrive. And the ones that are bold and invest now, obviously, again, not everyone can, unfortunately, but the ones that can and make the bold investments and the bold commitments will reap the benefits.
Mm-hmm. I think that's well said. So obviously, listening to you talk, it's clear that you're very passionate about the work you're doing and the vegan category and food itself. I'm assuming the company you work for shares that passion, at least to a certain extent, maybe not from a, you know, maybe not as into it as you are, but understands that that's the direction hopefully we're all heading in. What can we expect next from, you know, Deliveroo's focus on the vegan category, or any projects that you're working on? What are you excited about in the coming year?
I think it's not everyone shares the passion, but they definitely are. Oh, it's just, again, one of the incredibly satisfying parts of my role, which is sharing my love for food with others. And what people at Deliveroo are, again, is foodies. So if you go and tell someone about this incredible dish, they will want to try it, whether it's plant-based or not. But ultimately, as well as I mentioned earlier, it's the market opportunities, how we're supporting our brands in this journey, which is not an easy one as well. So I think that's something our partners really, really value from us, is that, you know, counseling and almost the confidence to know that someone like me that has personally gone through everything, but also is part of the industry, they really appreciate our support when it comes to making investment decisions around this. And what we're working really hard on is providing our users with a much more personalized experience, which I think is what you're seeing across most marketplaces, right? When you go on Netflix, they serve you right there exactly what you want to watch, right? Okay. When you go on Spotify, they give you the music you want to listen. So on Deliveroo, that's exactly what we're doing, and we're, you know, working hard to improve is essentially showing our consumers the options we know they're looking for across different days of the week and different times of day, because you're not going to be as likely to order a vegan burger at 9 a.m. as you will be at 7 p.m., right? So it's really understanding what is it that each of our consumers wants, because that's another layer to personalization. It's not, obviously you can group consumers in segments, but it's really getting super granular and giving Neil exactly what he wants and giving Elena exactly what she wants. So that's where we're focusing our efforts in ensuring absolutely always the priority, making sure we've got an amazing selection of options across categories, not just vegan, but then really giving consumers the best experience so that they keep coming back.
Yeah. I mean, it's the fact that Deliveroo has a role focused on this category, I think in itself is just a sign of the times. And it's very, hopeful for the future. How is, if you don't mind me asking this question, how is your success measured at Deliveroo? Is it based on in sales of vegan, of the vegan category? Is it more an advisory role? You know, yeah, tell me more about that. Because it's a tech company after all. I'm sure they want to measure your success.
No, it's a great question, actually. And, you know, we're figuring it out. Every year it changes. But I think so Deliveroo is a super forward-thinking company. And it's been amazing to work collaboratively with, you know, senior leaders in the business. So we tend to sit down together at the end of the year and put together a plan for what we want to achieve. We normally work with really big goals and then bring them down. So yes, we measure sales because I think, I mean, anyone, you know, in a similar business will know the importance of tracking order volumes and revenue and profitability, of course. All of those metrics are there. But what we want to achieve through this category is really that building that connection with our users. So we're exploring now metrics to measure engagement and brand love and affinity. I'll tell you what, it's tricky to come up with with KPIs every year, but it's just super interesting. And ultimately, again, we're really open to testing stuff. And sometimes we say, look, let's try this. And 3 months later, we realize it's not working and then we change it. So we're super agile and super adaptable. But yes, the sales targets are always there because ultimately without them, we just can't keep growing either. So, yeah.
It's maybe this is already something that is being considered or is being done. But, you know, the way I think about it, what's really interesting could be if, and to what extent that you are the biggest platform in that region. So, and if depends on how engaged you are with your restaurants, you give the example of the Greek restaurant that had a regular menu and then an entirely plant-based one. What if Deliveroo could, if it doesn't do that already, play a role in advising and connecting restaurants with distributors and suppliers and perhaps other companies that can come in and add all vegan concepts on top of existing restaurants or work with them as a way to driving more interest in sales? Because you are in that role where you can say, hey, listen, we've got data that proves that by adding 5 vegan items on your menu, you're going to lift your sales overall by a certain number. And if you could play that, you know, role in the middle, connecting the dots between folks in the industry, it could be a really powerful place to be in.
So we're actually on it. This is something we've been doing for a while. And again, probably one of the areas that where there's room for improvement. But yeah, absolutely. As you say, like, we're in a privileged position because we know what, you know, what direction demand is going, what our brands are currently offering and what the gaps are. So that's a role we're already playing and we plan to continue to drive forward for sure.
Yeah, and that sounds easier than it actually is practically to do.
Yes.
It seems like a simple concept, but it is not, because each restaurant's different. They all source ingredients from different places, and mostly restaurants don't want to be told what to do. But that's super interesting to hear about. I mean, it's just so clear that by having a focus on this, Deliveroo can have such a positive impact. And the fact that they have a commitment to it shows that they understand the issue, they see the trends, and hopefully you can almost play the role of steering it in the right direction, even if it was going to go there anyway. You can make it happen. You can accelerate the pace at which change happens, which I think is what's needed right now, given the state of our climate crisis and the state of the world in general. So, yeah, that leads me to kind of my last question. I give the year 2050 as the year we need to try to prepare for, partly it's arbitrary, but mostly it was based on the fact that we're projected to be about 10 billion people on the planet by 2050. If you look at all the stats about the, you know, impact of climate change, its impact on land, food security, water, if we don't change now, and I think this is the last gasp hope we have to change, we're going to be in a pretty bad state as a planet in the year 2050. But very clearly, we are trying to change. There's been attempts by food companies, the food industry in general, the very fact that the largest food delivery platform in Europe has got someone focused on the vegan category, which we know can have a significant positive impact on food and the climate, tells us that we are attempting to bring about a change. Keeping all that in mind, you know, what do you hope people will be eating in 2050? And what do you think the food system will sort of look like then? And there's no right and wrong answers. Obviously, you can dream big.
I wish I could predict the future. So I would love to see people explore the amazing legumes and beans and, you know, soy and tempeh. Like, there's just such an incredible range. And for me personally, switching to a plant-based diet has changed my life completely. I not only feel so much better physically, I used to, you know, binge on food, and all of those things just disappeared, because in general, this is a personal experience, but I think through plant-based food, you can really connect, you know, body, mind, spirit in a way that not many other foods allow. And how this makes you feel is really revolutionary. And so your energy changes, your mood, your focus at work. So I'm digressing a little bit, I know, but it's essentially like, if people try more of these foods, they will feel better. And so for me, honestly, I have no, you know, intention or interest in converting everyone to being vegan or anything like that. For me, it's like, find what works for you, but please really explore the plant kingdom, because it's incredible and it really has the power to change your life at home, at work, physically, mentally. So, yeah, I mean, and then obviously, like, cultivated meat, super exciting. Mm-hmm. And all the plant-based alternatives as well. I think they are going to continue growing and driving uptake. So for me, they're amazing. Like, I love my favorite thing when I wasn't vegan was eating. I'm a super basic cook. I love cooking, but I don't necessarily have that much time during the week. So for me, like boiling a little bit of broccoli and then having some vegan chicken on the side sometimes, it's just like the way it used to be. So, you know, those plant alternatives are really awesome to really help people make the transition and continue to enjoy the foods they love. So I hope we continue to see a variety of options. But ultimately, what I hope is that more and more people eat more plant-based more often, whatever that means for them.
Yeah, that's a good goal to have. Well, Elena, this has been a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you for all your insights and for all the work that you're doing and for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. And hopefully my predictions for 2050 are are right. But yeah,
people need to eat more plants. That's always a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And thanks for the work you're doing as well. It's amazing. And, you know, having access to all of these insights from a lot of really interesting and, you know, cool people in the industry is awesome. So thank you.
You've been listening to Eat for the Planet with Nil Zacharias. If you enjoy this conversation and would like to show your support, all you have to do is subscribe to the show and rate and review it. To learn more about this podcast or my work, go to eftp.co. That's eftp.co. Thank you for listening.